Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Good morning, everybody.
Hello, wonderful people.
I feel left out of the club. You both are wearing the same hoodies.
Oh. It's so soft inside still because the chemical they used to make the inside soft hasn't been washed off yet because I haven't washed it yet.
You know, I love how much like all the tested folks have been coming to me in the last couple of weeks and going, this is like a blanket.
Yeah.
It's like a winter coat. Oh,
I have four of these now.
No, yeah.
And it's the people gave me so much grief.
So just to be clear, we're wearing American Giant hoodies that were a lovely Christmas gift from the amazing folks at American Giant to the tested crew. And we put up a picture on social media last week. And they sewed Savage meatball patches onto the shoulder, and everyone on Tested is just really enjoying the warmth of these hoodies.
Really needed this week.
Really looking forward to you opening up your new restaurant, Savage Meatballs.
Sweaty.
Cloudy with a chance of. Yes, we just got back from... You know what I kept on thinking this weekend?
What did you keep on thinking this weekend?
I kept on hearing Roman Mars in my head going... Hello, beautiful nerds.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's exactly that. So Will and I just got back from Ord Camp in Chicago. Do you want to, you can give the elevator pitch for Ord Camp.
We have talked about it in the past, but it is an unconference, which means that the curators, the hosts pick an interesting group of people. Some people have been there many times like me. I'm hashtag blessed. Some people who are brand new like you. And they put you together and they explain the ground rules of the event. And then at the end of that opening session, they give everybody these big, like 3x5 post-it cards and some Sharpies. And you write something that either you'd like to teach, that you'd like to talk about, or that you think you would like to learn. And you smack them up on this big board that has a list of all the, it has a grid of all the rooms and all the times. And then it kind of organizes itself from there. Like you put dots on, but the dots are really just to help get the big talks in the big rooms and the small talks in the small rooms.
So that's part of it. But the other part of it is that you show up on Friday at like 2 p.m. to hear the opening plenary session and then start to think about what you'd like to talk about and what you'd like to hear other people talk about. And then you go that night until like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Or 5.
And then you wake up the next day and do it again from noon until 7 o'clock the following, Sunday morning. And I did the full Ord experience. I lasted until 7 in the morning, and then we all went out for breakfast. You, me,
that's
Fitz,
the first time I've done that one,
Dan
by the way.
Shapiro.
So, the 50 people or so?
375, 420, somewhere in there.
Okay. Wow. Couple
hundred.
There
was 50 left at 7 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Yeah, those were the last people standing.
That you guys
we were playing Werewolf.
Yeah,
from like 1 to 4 in the morning.
That was the most people I've ever seen. I think I've made it to 7 every year, but maybe 1.
Yeah,
and that's the most people I've ever seen.
It was. I mean, just
how do introverts deal with this?
So it's all introverts. It's almost all introverts.
The thing is that the introverts deal with this because there are entire swaths of the building that are for quiet. Mm-hmm. So you can literally go somewhere where being in that space means leave me alone.
No silent. No talking.
There are beanbags. There are pianos. There are quiet corners everywhere. And I said to several people in different conversations, yeah, I'm introvert extrovert, right? Like, yeah. I love being out and talking to people, but I also need a lot of quiet time to recoup. And that is, you're right. It's a conference full of introvert extroverts.
The tracks are the main thing. The whole idea of the unconference is to recreate the interesting hallway conversations that you have at a good conference with like interesting people,
which are the only truly interesting parts of most conferences. Is the hallway 100%. Conversations.
Yeah.
It's why Pixar has the bathrooms designed the way they are.
Oh, really?
In a public space where it's to have happy accidents as people bump into each other going to the bathrooms.
Oh, interesting.
Or exiting.
Well, so you go. You pick some sessions you want to go see. Usually I recommend that people find a mix of things that they're really, really interested in. And then like a couple of things that you would never think you'd be into. And you always will learn something interesting. But also like everybody's. So Fitz, who's a friend of the site and used to work at Google, now runs this site thing called Talk, has always introduced the idea of the Pac-Man rule when you're having a conversation.
Pac-Man rule for conversation is so freaking awesome. I mean, I didn't...
Explain it.
It's something I do anyway.
You knew, but you didn't know what it was called. So the idea is, if you're standing in a group of people and there's other people around, you leave a space for another person so that there's always a way for somebody to like join that conversation without having to like weasel in between two people.
Like a physical space.
Physical space.
Yeah, so basically it's like you can see people moving towards you. You, as that happens... You open the circle and you let them come in.
And it's a it's a wonderful practice that benefits in daily walks of life all the time.
Truly.
The other things that they've talked about that over the last couple of years have been become very important. We've had an extended conversation about mansplaining that Dan Shapiro gave a really good talk last year in the opening plenary. That's like, hey, look around. If everybody in this room looks like you, then, you know, look at the number of people and then roll a D20. If there's 20 people in the room and you don't roll a natural 20, probably wait your turn to talk, right? Let everybody else talk.
And his talk was a little controversial with some attendees.
There were some people who kind of stormed out because they thought that they were talking about them. He wasn't. He was
this always happens when someone gives a little, a gentle corrective like that. There are some people who take that really poorly.
Well, so the thing that's changed over the 6 years that I've been going is it's gone from being a bunch of middle-aged white guys talking all the time. Self-included.
Yep. Mea maxima.
They call that a podcast.
I make that joke every year multiple times. It is a good joke. Much more diverse group of people.
It was about
voices.
As diverse as one of the more diverse environments I've spent time in since I spent a lot of time working with the Obama White House. Mm-hmm. Like that was, it was a really remarkable group. I walk into the conference and I'm sidle up next to someone who's walking next to me and we say good morning and we have never met before and we start chatting and I say, what brings you to Ord Camp? Which is a much nicer thing than what you do.
Yeah.
And she says, my specialty is in human sexuality and disability. And I'm like, fucking awesome.
I'm gonna talk to you right? for 5 minutes. I'm going to learn like 18 things. Right.
About 2 weeks before the conference, there were three astronauts present. Chell Lindgren, Katie Coleman, and Don Pettit. Luckily, all three close friends.
Yeah.
And Don emailed me or texted me a couple weeks before and said, are you bringing your spacesuit? And I was like, damn straight, I'm going to bring my spacesuit.
Which one?
Spaceman Don. I brought the A7L. And then when the came time to put up talks, I literally wrote, I brought a spacesuit. And 60 people showed up. I helped four or five people try on the spacesuit in the course of an hour. Chell and Don both came and actually did a significant amount of talking about what it's like to wear spacesuits.
Well, so this is the beautiful thing is often you'll put something up that you're like moderately interested in or you know a little bit about.
And
somebody with true expertise will be there and be like, okay, well. And then you just do the session together, right? So yeah. It's like a total communal grow your own conference. Well,
so there was this one point at which someone – I love exactly this – specific intersection of that kind of crowd who doesn't know the Playtex, ILC, Dover, soft versus hard, one size fits all versus custom bespoke story of the NASA spacesuit. And I love telling that story to a crowd that doesn't know it because it's a lot of oohs and ahs, right? And I'm halfway through the story and I'm like, tell me if I'm getting anything wrong. And Don Pettit goes, no, it's good.
Well, but the funny thing that came out of that was the women in the audience – You guys, I wasn't in the session. I was someplace else doing something else. But you apparently started talking about how, like, the spacesuits on the station are one size fits all. And Katie Coleman is a small person. Chell Lundgren is pretty big guy.
Yeah, Mike Massimino's a giant.
Enormous.
Yeah.
And like, the fit analysis of all of these things is all over the place. So, like, Katie's uncomfortable. The thing we learned is that the people who are big are equally uncomfortable in different ways.
And that, like, being in space is super, like, Chell and Don did a whole thing about how rough a spacewalk is.
The fingernails was...
Yeah, losing their fingernails.
But then somebody said, hey, this is probably, like, what Knights felt like armor was. And a guy who does combat archaeology? I can't remember.
Well, he's actually like a foremost historical European martial arts fighter brought a replica but fighting suit of 15th century armor that was his.
I got to help him put it on.
Dude. we'll post this, but check out Mary Robinette Ford wearing the A7L. Look at the joy on her face.
That's great.
She was so happy. The sound, I'm still jealous because I don't know what sound the dome makes. I can't get my head in there. It's too big.
Adam, that's also the first time I've seen someone with unironically use the portrait mode spotlight mono filter on
the iPhone.
Oh, is
that what that is?
It was the black background and the, yeah.
So just to give people an idea. So, okay, there's two things everybody should know.
Yeah.
One, unconferences, it's hard to do one at the scale that they do Ord Camp now. But Ord Camp started.
It takes a huge amount of consciousness and institutional knowledge to do it right, I think.
However, if you want to do something like this in your community, they started Ord Camp 12 years ago. I think Fitz said 75 people 75 attended the people. First one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get to get 75 people, you get 10 friends and tell them to invite 2 people, 3 people each, and then you add some more people, and like starting with 50 or 75 people is eminently doable for, I bet, a lot of people who listen to us. It is a profoundly, profoundly recharging and moving experience for me. That's why I keep going back every year, because I learn new things and it fills my brain and my heart up almost to bursting.
I mean,
over a 48-hour period.
You know, on the first day, I started watching people juggle, and that's when I met Taylor, whose YouTube channel, Taylor Tries. She's a world-class master juggler who every one of her videos ends with a drop.
She is. I was on her channel last night. Yeah. So I was like, she did 4 clubs on stage,
right?
From a toss, and I was just like,
and
got on the first try.
She had a lot of patience with me. I was passing clubs with her after about 10 minutes, and I haven't talked about passing clubs on the podcast before. Okay, when you first get obsessed with juggling, you juggle 3 balls, and then you matriculate to clubs. You know, like learning anything, there's diminishing returns to the skill acquisition, right? The better you get, the slower your progress gets, because
there's kind of plateaus, right? You get to a mastery, and then you'd learn the new thing.
Yeah. But then you bring in clubs, and it feels like this big leap ahead because your body takes it in, and you feel it, right? And then someone introduces you to passing, and the first time you pass a club, which is you throw it out of your formation away from you towards someone else, and you put your hand up, and a club lands in that hand. There's this way in which it feels you've already spent like years getting your body to understand these objects that are flying and kind of that presence of mind. And to have you break your formation and find a piece from outside your formation into it, it's like it's intoxicating. And it was beautiful. We sat there juggling in a crowded hallway for hours.
There were 4 or 5 people at one time juggling and passing. And so at one point, there was like a 3-way passing circle where Harper and Mark and Taylor and you were throwing all clubs. So I have a goal for 2021.
Yeah.
I can juggle balls a bunch of different ways. I can do cascades. I can do flourishes.
But you don't do clubs?
I've never been able to do clubs. For a long time, it was because when I was a kid, clubs were really expensive.
Oh, yeah. No, $100 for a pair of 3. I bought my first pair from Brian Dubay in Soho from over the counter from his little store.
Yeah.
Will, I have a pair of clubs upstairs. I will loan them to you.
Oh, that would be wonderful. I was gonna go order some cheap Chinese ones.
No. I've got some beautiful ones.
Okay, well, I wasn't fishing here, just for the record.
It's totally fine.
My goal for 2021 is to learn to do clubs so I can learn to pass.
I want
to
do 5 balls. I've saved that every
few 4
years. I can do 4.
Okay.
In fact, apparently.
The 4
the way,
with 2 hands.
The way that I can do 4, which is 2 balls in each hand, but in a circle going inwards.
Yeah.
Taylor was telling me that that's the hardest way to do 4 balls.
That's the way I can't do 4 balls for very long, and I have to be very lucky to get them going. But when I do, that's the way I do them. I didn't know there was an easier way.
So she actually has some instruction on her channel for doing 5, and I'm excited about that. I'm really glowing, and I'm still not caught up on my sleep.
Well, so,
and you can hear it in my voice.
Well, I slept 5 hours between Thursday night and I slept Thursday night, and then Friday night I slept like 3 hours, and Saturday night I didn't sleep at all until I got home on
Sunday.
I'll
tell you, few things tasted as good as those scrambled eggs at 8 in the morning on Sunday after being up all night.
Yeah, I had a piece of bacon, some English muffin.
Is it all in a hotel in Chicago?
No, it's at Google's headquarters.
It's Google's headquarters in Chicago, and you're staying at the hotel across the street.
Got it. Are there any other sessions, panels you went to?
Yes, I took a taxidermy class and made a little nightmare fuel mouse in a taxidermy class. Yeah, hold on.
Can you fly with that?
We will.
It's not liquid.
There you go.
Oh, my God. That's incredible. Describe that. That looks like it could be in Paxton Gate.
That was a 1-hour taxidermy class.
Lay this out.
So the taxidermy class, you break out a bag of frozen mice, which are meant for feeding snakes.
Okay.
Everyone gets a mouse and a scalpel, and you put a slice down their spine, and you slowly peel off the and you basically get the viscera out.
So you have to do this in a certain time because they're defrosting?
Well, yes, you want to, but the frozen keeps the viscera together.
Exactly.
But you also need them thawed enough to be able to peel the viscera off the, yeah, so it's
okay.
It's totally, and my lab partner was was a neuroscientist who cut apart mice every day. So I had a total ringer as my lab partner, which is why this is so good. We did this together. It was was awesome.
You pulled that, and then you're preserving and stuffing.
Yep. I went to all the space themed ones this year. So Katie Coleman, who's one of my heroes of the world, she and Mary Robinette Kowal talked about space and space for women, and that's where she talked extensively about, you know, in the NBL, when women are in the suit, they literally have to have pillows padding around them, otherwise they'll fall inside the suit,
like, because there's so much empty space
because of who it's built for, and how hard it is to accommodate the different body types.
It's one of the big challenges in the new suit design. It's the thing I learned last year from that session. let's see, I learned how to make spam musubi.
I saw that something you posted. It's a mold that you put in.
A mold to put the sushi rice in, and you jam it down there. But the trick I learned is that if you use the bacon spam instead of the spam, and you cut 12 slices per can, that gives you the right ratio of rice to spam to nori, and then you can put whatever kind of sauces you want in between, glaze the spam if you want to put some pineapple or something on. I didn't know I liked spam musubi until earlier this year. I helped the archaeologist put on the full set of steel armor. It's fascinating how different that is than putting on your costume armor.
Yeah,
because your stuff is mostly aluminum.
Yeah,
so it's A, very light.
Yeah.
But B, all of his stuff is attached the way that they actually would have done it. So there's like laces on the shoulders that pull up the arms.
Internal structures that hold it in orientation and distribute the weight across, because that one sits on his waist.
Hips, he was wearing a quilted shirt underneath the chainmail to prevent that from rubbing and chafing and pinching. Mm-hmm. But also, it's filthy. Like, because it's steel, you get really dirty because he'd spent time polishing it.
Anderson.
The gambeson is leather, actually. Because the different types of undergarments for different types of armor for different types of fighting. Oh my.
But he wore it for hours. He was like, it's perfectly comfortable. Once I get it on, it's perfectly comfortable. But Don helped a little bit with the donning of the armor as well, which was fun.
And Don Pettit, who's like, if Jamie Hyneman went to NASA. Right. The polymath who's really good at kind of everything, interested in everything.
Amazing photographer.
And by the way, do you know how he got some of those night shots? He modified a drill to spin at the same speed that Earth moves past the space station so that he could do long exposures.
Wow.
So he had like motion control with a drill.
With a drill.
What a wonderful nerd.
Right? So Don is talking about how they're talking about bringing a medical kit up to the space station, but no one knows what will happen if you accidentally expose pills, which have a lot of voids in them, to a perfect vacuum. But luckily, Don has a vacuum pump in his shop in Texas that can pull to 10 to the minus 8 torr.
Good God. What is he doing with that in his garage?
So he was able to double check that and actually publish a paper on the effect of a near, and that's within the range of the moon's. By the way, the vacuum on the surface of the moon is different depending on where you are and what time of day it is.
Because of solar radiation
and particles, right? Wow. So sometimes it's like Don was saying, it's a bandwidth, not a, These are the kind of things that we were going over.
Yeah. I got to, I had a lovely conversation about grief and pets and mindfulness with a couple of old friends that was just, because everybody's kind of under the friendier, don't share the things we're breaking. I mean, don't yell at us, Fitz. You tend to share things you maybe wouldn't in a more normal circumstance. And it ends up being a place that, like, as one person said to me, like, this is the place that, like, I have the most meaningful conversations with other men throughout the entire year, and I need to figure out how to make that happen in the rest of my real life.
It's a very safe place. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to overstate how safe it feels. You are as approachable as you want to be, and
you can feel like a normal person. Like,
indeed.
And it's amazing. Like, it is one. I know we're getting long.
No, we're good.
People play games.
Oh, that was the other thing.
I was going to say, you guys came back and Adam, you're talking about werewolf.
We were playing
nonstop.
So it's so funny. I think that ultimately I'm not an excellent werewolf player, but I am a
That's real werewolf talk right there.
I'm a producer, so if I see a lag, I'm going to push the game away from the lag, which means I'm very aggressive. And I'm always pointing out any little tells I can see. And I'm usually wrong about what I'm surmising from those tells. But I also, like, I don't mind being the villain Gotham needs. So I had so much fun playing, like, 4 straight hours.
Were you the werewolf ever?
Straight werewolf?
I was never the werewolf. I've only ever been the werewolf once in my life.
So it's straight werewolf.
Okay. Which, for people who don't know, game like Mafia, Game of Deception, A Ring of People, Cycles Day and Night, and a select number of villains try to assassinate the populace.
The more modern revisions of this are games like Resistance or Secret Hitler or Avalon.
Mafia, Avalon, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mafia's the old
Mafia's
style.
Mafia and Werewolf kind of, it's unclear which one evolved first.
That would be a good talk about where it came from. And
Totally.
I feel like Jane McGonigal probably did that years ago, but I'm not sure.
There were also talks about things like, hey, I'd like to talk about imposter complex. I'd like to talk about feeling overwhelmed about politics. Hey, what if we lose in 2020?
Yeah, what if we lose the election?
A lot of people were just bringing up stuff that they wanted to chat about, like being parents of ADHD children.
In 2017, right after the election.
I'll bet.
It was a completely different tenor, right?
I imagine.
People went the year that the Muslim ban landed.
Right.
All of the attorneys and people to support them went to O'Hare. Like, just were like, guys, we got to go. We're going to go to O'Hare. And they were part of the people that set up the defense fund. They bought one way tickets, went into the terminal, and sat with people who were stuck behind to help them get out.
I know that you're not supposed to name names, but I will name this one, which is that Fitz took me on a tour of his collection of storage media.
It's so good, isn't it?
Oh, my God. And we are very weirdly simpatico in our collecting proclivities.
Yeah, we know. I helped look that one up.
I got to see the very smallest cassette ever built and the largest cassette ever built.
How small?
The smallest cassette is this big, and the largest looks like a normal tape cassette, except it's this big and it's real.
Yeah, it works. Did he show you the vinyl tape? The German
the grooved tape.
I'm so phenomenally curious about how that works.
I know.
I just want to take it apart.
It's literally like an 8-track tape, but when you look at the tape, it's dimensional and it's
grooved,
and a needle reads a song signal off of it.
Wow.
So it's like a record, but a tape.
Yeah, yeah.
They have he has a spare magnet from the Tivatron.
Right. Which
why not? It weighs 850 pounds.
It's beautiful.
You got to see one of the second gen Google racks,
wow. Right?
After they got rid of the cork board, but before they started like manufacturing hardware themselves.
And he was showing how, because it had been stamped out of steel, it had all these sharp edges, you could cut your hands to ribbons on this thing trying to pull these out.
It was like an old PC
case. In fact, he pointed out that the protocol for putting in the bottom rack, the very bottom rack, was to get it somewhat in and then lie down on the ground and use your feet to kick it the last couple, because that was the only way to not over. Yeah.
I played a couple of games that are fabulous. I played Tommy Morangi's new game, which is out to backers really soon, called Inhuman Conditions. It started as a Voight Kampf test. I've been playing it at OrdCamp now for 4 years.
You tried to get me to play it was too late for me to pick
up. I have a copy here. I'll bring
it
over.
I really want
to
play. It looks like fun.
It's intensely personal. It basically brings like a werewolf type Secret Hitler game. He also made Secret Hitler, just to be clear, Tommy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With Tommy and Corey and Max. And basically it crams like a werewolf type game into a 5-player, 2-person experience. So you can play that with just one other person, maybe not your partner. And then I also played Wavelength, which is, I think, the best party game I've ever played.
Really?
You start with a category, and the category is like two kind of dipoles. So like, for example, soft or hard, large or small, sexy Pokemon, unsexy Pokemon, Star Wars, Star Trek.
Yeah.
And then you have this circle. A semicircle is exposed and it has a big white disc, and you spin the big white disc and that exposes a range that's maybe 5% of the semicircle.
Right.
And you have to look at where that range is on the semicircle, cover it up, and then you have to figure out a clue that's going to tell your other players how to turn this red needle to hit that range based on the range that you picked before.
Ooh.
So if you picked...
But do they see the dipoles? They know the
They know the dipoles.
Okay.
But they don't know the range.
Where with between them.
If I have Star Wars and Star Trek and I pick J.J. Abrams, where do you think... Do you think that's straight between
and
the
that's
two?
That's your clue.
That's
your,
my
your
clue. That's all I can say. I can give one concept.
Yeah. Only one. That's
pretty
one.
Squarely between yeah. between the two.
That's an easy
right?
one. It's yeah. right in the middle, right?
In the middle. Okay.
If
a little
I,
more towards Star Wars.
If I pick dog fighting...
Oh, that's way in the Star Wars category.
But is it all the way in the Star Wars? Is it like 10% out of the Star Wars? Or is it 20% of the Star Wars?
The range is about a 5% sliver.
The range you're aiming for is like a 5% chunk of the overall semicircle.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
It's yeah. a. It is like... I got to play with a bunch of journalists and pedants and writers.
Pedants.
And it was delightful.
Best people play games with.
Well, to play this, like, this game is all about precision and language. Yeah, yeah. And we had some fascinating conversations based on the things people chose. Because sometimes you're like, people start talking, like, you give the clue and people start talking, you're like, fuck yeah, I got this one.
Well, it's and the then, same way that code names works.
It's very like monikers, actually. It's kind of code namesy, kind of monikersy. I think it's from the people who made monikers, actually. Sometimes people start talking like, oh, well, I made a horrible miscalculation on what people were going to think I meant by this. Dan Shapiro won't mind me telling this, but he had soft and hard, and he touched his nose starting at the tip and ran up to the bridge where the bone is and said, this part of your nose right here. And he was trying to be clever and give us a range, set his range yeah. for this conversation as... Nose on the scope of your nose.
Right.
Is this the hard part or the soft part?
Right.
I immediately, being an asshole, started talking about the
cartilage.
Like aerogel versus the surface of a neutron star. And I was like, well, on that one, it's like definitely on the soft side. And we were off by 95% or something. But anyway, I posted it on Twitter if you want to find a link. There's like two or three different games called Wavelength on Amazon. So careful if you buy it. But
we'll post the correct.
Yeah, I'll repost it or send it to.
One of the lovely things about it feeling like such a safe space is that when you're playing games, there's a way in which that allows you to be both more and less competitive in a way that is super enjoyable. It's like you can be hyper competitive and even be like activated in playing. Well, I was experienced in playing Werewolf, but the stakes are still really low.
No one's taking
it personally.
It's about making a good game, not winning.
Right.
Which is the best part about the whole thing.
Yeah. You're not.
We stopped playing Wavelength because you can play it with teams. About an hour and a half in, we stopped and just started playing it with a group of people all trying to just get the answer.
Oh, nice.
And it ended up being like a lovely way to get other people's perspectives on the world. Right. So,
So they've been inviting me for a long time, and this is the first time in forever that I haven't had a significant conflict with being able to go. And I'm so glad. I am so ecstatic that I went.
I'm so glad you were able to make it.
Oh my God. It was really just good. Stunning. And I walked in and there was like 20 people I know. And there's probably 50 people that I knew well at this place, right? It's a lot of old friends.
Well, but even a large part of what they do at OrgCamp specifically, because I've been to some other end conferences that were also very good. They do a really good job of making sure that the people who've been there before help onboard the people who haven't.
That's very, very much a central ethos and a really lovely one.
So even if you don't know anyone, I know I have a good friend who came last year for the first time. She didn't know anyone.
Right.
I happened to be one of the people milling around the entrance that had been there before to like kind of give people the lay of the land and then get them in the photo line. And we had a lovely chat. And by the end of... like walking through the line, I'd introduced her to a couple people, and then she was good. She was like off running and had a delightful time.
Yeah.
So
where do people find more information about conferences like this?
So if you Google unconferences, there are several guides. I don't know if the one that that the OrgCamp folks have used is public, but I'll find out. And if it is, I'll give you a sharing link. There's FooCamp is the first one of these that I was aware of. And it's a Bay Area kind of Silicon Valley thing. Yeah. It's a little different tenor. I've never actually been, but people who I know have been to both, it's like it's a little more valley and a little bit less general nerd interest.
And I think that, you know, I've talked in the podcast about Mars Conference extensively, and I think that Mars is deeply informed by the Unconference in having only 2 hours of talks in the morning, and the rest of the entire conference is hanging out and doing activities with each other, because that's where the meat of all the interesting stuff happens.
And the point of this isn't to go to the talks. I like some years I go, and if the talks don't grab me, I just stand in the halls and talk to people.
Yeah.
And like that's how I ended up at the Bobak was at the Spamasubi thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to talk to Bobak. And then I was like, oh, yeah, this also seems useful.
Oh, I also love, I did this twice at the conference, was finding out that one person I knew hadn't yet met another person I knew. And I was really good. Come over here. Come over here. Okay. You go. And like I did that a couple of times. And later on, like two folks I introduced were talking on a couch for 2 hours.
Yep.
Just like stunning.
Yep. It's superhero business.
Cross-pollinating.
XOXO is another one.
XOXO is, it's not an Unconference, but it is a very similar vibe. Yeah. Andy McMillan, who runs XOXO, was one of the people who runs XOXO, was there this year, and I got to spend some good time with him, which is always a delight. Awesome. But yeah, XOXO is a more accessible way to do this. Also, there are a lot of Unconferences around. There's people starting new ones every day. I talked to three people who are bringing Unconferences to their local localities.
We could really use one here in the Bay Area.
Hello.
I'm just saying.
Hi. Hello.
Just someone give us a space.
But, interesting you say that. People are starting them all the time. They always need volunteers. So OrdCamp has a volunteer page. If you are worried that you can't get in, don't know anybody who can nominate you or whatever, like they love volunteers.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's always needed. So.
I did that in my late teens to a couple of things that I couldn't afford to go to. I was a volunteer and an organizer. I worked in the kitchen for one conference, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. Same for Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
The other thing that's great about this is it once the initial time starts. Like it used to be that the folks who organized it got there early and put up all the posters and did all the signage and all that stuff for the conference. I think now they just show up at 2 and put the posters out and tell people to go put them up. Wow. And it just takes care of itself.
Right.
Which is amazing.
Oh,
people were there cleaning at 7 o'clock in the morning. So we left the place hopefully at least as good as we found it.
I will say, one of my sons, Thing 2, lives in Chicago now. And so I got to see him both the first night I arrived and had dinner with him and two of my best friends on Sunday night before leaving Monday morning. And there's a thing about parenting. When you are a new parent, I think one of the things that I spent a lot of time thinking about was, oh my God, I can't wait till I'm standing on the street and my kid has their little hand fingers wrapped around my big finger.
Oh, it's so good.
Right? And you think, this is going to be great. And when it happens, it's so much better, right? It like exceeds all your expectations. So I'm here to tell you that traveling to another city where your kid lives and taking them out to dinner is just as good.
Oh, that's so good.
It's a whole new perspective on like seeing your kid out in the world and being a human being. And like my son's working in this great restaurant in Chicago. And it's a restaurant that's like a big family. So I got to go see his workplace and they all love him there.
That's
and
awesome.
I got to meet Chef and it was a beautiful weekend.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad. Yeah, it was wonderful. Everybody should do it. Start your own if you can't find one. That's it.
Indeed. And Spot video went up this week.
Yes. You know what? Yeah. We're going to talk about Spot. Let's devote a whole episode to Spot.
We will.
Next episode.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. By all means. It's just very excited. I'm very excited
you
at the response
it,
to it.
And we'll dive into that. Other stuff going up this week. We had a friend, a new friend in the effects business, Ben Eady, came by, and he makes chainmail out of foam.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful, beautiful, simple chainmail hack.
Did you guys see that foam cutter that I sent you last night?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. I'm curious what you find interesting about it, because I'd just love to get your take. It looked really interesting.
Well, okay. Stay tuned for that conversation.
Okay.
Next episode.
Thank you, guys.
Wow. Bye.
See ya.